Any king who does not teach his citizens about their respective duties in terms of varna and ashram, but who simply exacts tolls and taxes from them, is liable to suffer for the impious activities which have been performed by the citizens. In addition to such degradation, the king also loses his own fortune.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A king, governor, or president should not take the opportunity to occupy his post without also discharging his duty. He must teach the people within the state how to observe the divisions of varna and ashram. If a king neglects to give such instructions and is simply satisfied with levying taxes, then those who share in the collection, namely all the government servants and the head of the state, are liable to share in the impious activities of the general masses. The laws of nature are very subtle. For example, if one eats in a place which is very sinful, he shares in the resultant reaction of the sinful activities performed there. It is a Vedic system, therefore, for a householder to call Brahmins and Vaishnavas to eat at ceremonial performances in his house, because the Brahmins and Vaishnavas can immunize him from sinful activities. But it is not the duty of rigid Brahmins and Vaishnavas to accept invitations everywhere. There is, of course, no objection to taking part in feasts in which prasad is distributed. There are many subtle laws which are practically unknown to people in general. But the Krishna consciousness movement is very scientifically distributing all this Vedic knowledge for the benefit of the people of the world. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 21, entitled Instructions by Maharaj Prithu, text number 24. The serious responsibility that is upon those who take position of leadership is herein explained in very strong terms. When we take responsibility as a leader over other people's lives, there are some benefits that come. But along with that comes the serious responsibility of accepting karmic consequences according to their behavior. the verse today is discussing a king. How his first duty is to guide the citizens according to Varnashram, according to their performing their respective duties according to the laws of God. And if the king does not, then every single citizen who commits sinful activities due to not being trained properly, that king has to share a portion of the sin with each and every citizen. And that includes president, governor, or other such heads of state. If you're taking taxes from the citizens, you're actually seriously responsible, seriously obligated to them. Srila Prabhupada explains the nature of this phenomena. That is, that there are very subtle laws of material nature, which unfortunately in today's world, people are ignorant of. We have our laws of state, but far greater than the laws of the state are the laws of nature. Because in certain situations, you can break the laws of the state and get good karma if you're in harmony with the laws of nature. And in other situations, you can follow obediently the laws of the state and be gliding toward the darkest regions of hell karmically according to the laws of nature. Therefore, in the Vedic system or in an actual civilized society, the laws of the state and the laws of God are one and the same. That is why throughout the great scriptures of the world we find that great kings always have as their most essential ministers learned Brahmins, self-realized souls, who are directing them according to the laws of God. We read of Prabhupada often cites Chanakya Pandit. Chanakya Pandit was just a self-satisfied Brahmin. He was living in a little clay hut. He had no furniture, no utensils, no possessions, nothing. He was just such a simple person. Why? Because he didn't need those things. These things are for foolish people who are not self-satisfied. They need these things. A person that's satisfied doesn't need anything. Now, great kings, you read about Yudhisthira Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, even Ramchandra, they have palatial palaces, beautiful thrones, and all sorts of material possessions, you may say. Because as a king, as a kshatriya, they require to have all of that to properly have influence to rule over the citizens. It is their duty. But a Brahmin, it's actually his duty to set the highest standard of self-satisfaction by his own conduct. Therefore, no one questioned the motivations of Chanakya Pandit when he was giving his instructions to the king. Because everyone saw, right before their eyes, What is he getting from this? Inside and outside, he was transparent. He was living in his little hut, and he had nothing. And he was not getting any benefits from his instructions or his influence. He was simply doing it as a service, because he was satisfied within his own heart. He didn't need any of this. And because the king was being evaluated and instructed by such Brahmins, the citizens in general had complete faith in the king, because they understood he was being monitored by pure self-real, by pure souls who were actually very advanced spiritually and morally, and who really had their interests in their heart. And we find this is the case of all the great kings and leaders of government throughout history. When Vishwamitra Muni came to Ayodhya, Dasarath was a king. He was living in the beautiful palace of Ayodhya. And Vishwamitra Muni, he just had some tree bark around his body, living in the jungle. He had no possessions. But yet, Maharaj Dasarath put him on the throne, washed his feet, and asked him for instructions, begged him for blessings, not as a formality like today, give me your blessings. But giving blessings today means tell me what I want to hear. But Vishwamitra Muni, his blessing was he told Dasarath Maharaj the very thing he didn't want to hear. Give me your son. Very well, very difficult. He was asking him to give up that which was most dear to his life. And although it was so difficult, and he struggled violently in his heart over this instruction, he ultimately did it. He gave him Ram and Lakshman. Why? Because it was the dharma of the king to be obedient, to take the direction of those who were in the renounced order, of those who were actually knowing deeply through knowledge and realization, what does Krishna want? Just like Srila Prabhupada. One time he said, if the devotees we have right now, this was in 1972, if they would all just be united to follow my instructions, we could take over the world in 18 days. So one devotee said, Prabhupada, then we will make you the king. And Prabhupada said, no, I will be the guru of the king. Because the guru of the king is a higher position than the king. The Brahman, actual qualified Brahman, is the highest position in society, the head of society. According to the analogy of the body regarding Varnashram Dharma, the Kshatriya are the arms. The arms' function is to give and to take and to protect. But the Brahman is the head. The arms, can you imagine just having two gigantic, powerful arms without a head? Just create a mess. That is the world today, a mess. Therefore, Prabhupada put the greatest emphasis on we must train qualified Brahmins to give direction to society. Maharaj Prithu himself, although he was Shaktivesh avatar, he was a perfectly self-realized soul. Even he, to set a proper example, sitting on the throne of king, he would obey. He would obey in a spirit of service the direction of the Brahmins. And the Brahmins, in a spirit of serving him, not in a spirit of lording it over him, would share with him information from the scriptures, from the Vedas. What does Krishna want in this situation? What is the purpose of life? Real civilization means that the leadership makes every decision in harmony with what is the purpose of life. And actually, in our own lives, we should all be very much making our decisions according to this principle. What is actually the purpose of life and how to achieve it? And every big or little decision we make should facilitate progressing toward our goal. It should not be isolated from our goal. Today, even the presidents, they will go to the church or they will go to the temple. But how much are they integrating the spirit of God and true Dharma into their activities, into the policies and decisions that they're making? Now we have our senates and our House of Representatives or our parliaments, or what do you call it, Lok Sabha, or what all these things. We all have our houses of state, where whatever the prime minister or the president or the may decide, it's discussed by them and ratified by them, or vetoed by them. However, it is such assemblies of learned, saintly, pure-hearted Brahmins that meet together to discuss what the government is actually doing and what its direction should be. That is the Vedic system. King Vena, he was a king that disregarded the Brahmins. The Brahmins advised him, directed him in every possible way. They actually praised him with sweet words and explained what is really your duty. But he was so egoistic and so sinful that he rejected their advice. But they understood, we are responsible for the people because we're Brahmins. It's not only the king that's responsible, the Brahmins are responsible too. The fact that they have the knowledge that they have, they're responsible for protecting people, guiding people, and elevating people with their knowledge. In the case of Maharaj Vena, the Brahmins didn't just say, well, we'll just go into seclusion and do our bhajan and let Vena do what he's going to do. What can we do? No, it is our duty. It is our responsibility that the citizens are given this knowledge. And he's not giving them? He's not receiving it from us and giving them? So they came together and discussed the matter and came to the only proper decision they could. They chanted mantras to end King Vena's life. Hare Krishna. And then Prithu Maharaj was born. Now, of course, we cannot imitate these things. It is actually, these were the ministers of the king. These were very high Brahmins. But they had that sense of responsibility. Because people are suffering. due to living in such a way that they are breaking the laws of nature. And all of our arrangements to try to alleviate suffering is superficial, external, and doomed to failure. Unless we teach the citizens how to live for their own actual benefit. Because these laws of nature, Prabhupada explained, are very, very subtle, but thorough, powerful, all-pervading. Srila Prabhupada explained, so subtle that just the environment around you is so much surcharged with the particular consciousness within that environment. Prabhupada explains herein, if you eat in a place where there's sinful activities going on, the sinful activities are in that food, even if it's vegetarian.
Haribo.
Srila Prabhupada explains that when a person invites you to a house, to their house, and you are representing the principles of Dharma, then what happens when you go to their house, you have to absorb the sins of that house. That's what Prabhupada says right here in this purport. And that's why it is so popular in India to invite sadhus to your house. Is it actually in a mood of service? That we want to serve you, we want to please you. What's actually happening is they're inviting you to absorb the sins, suffer their sins. So next time someone says, please place your lotus feet in my house, we should understand that this is the system. And don't think that people don't know this. It is subtle. You go to a restaurant, what kind of sinful people are eating in those restaurants? And what kind of sinful people may be cooking in those restaurants? Even if it's a vegetarian restaurant. Obviously it's far less sinful karma, but still. The sins of the atmosphere, the sins of the customers, the sins of everything, it's going right in. And you're eating it. It's very dangerous. Therefore, we find in our Vedic culture, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and other sannyasis, they would not eat at the house except pure-hearted Brahmins. They simply wouldn't. They wouldn't even take food from the house. When Lord Chaitanya was traveling, Balabhadra Bhattacharya or Kal Krishna Das, his various servants, they would only go to beg from the house of very pure-hearted, qualified Brahmins. In fact, they wouldn't even eat at the house of lower caste Brahmins. Because in those days, you know, people were more living according to the traditions of their families. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Mathura, the Sanodiya Brahman invited him for prasad. No, I'm sorry, he didn't invite him for prasad. Lord Chaitanya invited himself. The Sanodiya Brahman, he said, how can you eat at my house? I'm a lower Brahman. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you're a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri himself ate at your house. I'm coming to your house for my purification. So from this incident, we can understand how subtle the culture was. He was a Brahmin, but of a lower order. Therefore, those who were in a renounced order of life would not dare touch food from their houses. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he just crashed through all the barriers of caste consciousness. Chaturvarna mayastristam guna karma vibhagasha. One is categorized according to their actions and according to their qualities. The Sanodiya Brahman was a Vaishnava. He had a pure heart. Therefore, Mahaprabhu felt, I will be purified eating at your house. So there was discrimination. And Srila Prabhupada warns us many times, we have to be very, very careful who we associate with and how we associate. Because whatever we associate with, we absorb that influence. This is a subtle law of nature. On the gross level, we see that if a person, if a child is associating people with who are smoking these cigarettes or watching the movies or go drinking liquor, then inevitably they're going to do those things because that's the association that they're influenced by. On a subtler level, wherever we go, we're being influenced. Whoever we associate with, we're being influenced. Whatever we eat, the karma of the entire atmosphere is going into that food. And it will affect your consciousness. Not only will it affect your consciousness, but it'll affect your very karmic status. Because you're absorbing karma. You have to suffer due to certain karmas that you didn't even do. What do you owe? But you've made a decision to actually share it by associating with that atmosphere. So the laws of nature are not just black and white. Modern education likes to see things in terms of categorizations and very, very clear conceptions. This is this and this is that. Yes? But the laws of karma are very, very, very subtle. In detail, they are impossible to understand. But in principle, we can understand very clearly. That what we associate with, we will become very much influenced by that, karmically. Let us take example of Maharaj Vena. Maharaj Vena was sinful, and because he was sinful, and because the people of the society had to associate with him, they were all suffering karmic reactions due to him. They were all sharing the reactions that he was, of the sins he was committing because of their association with him. And of course the king, if he's actually leading people on the right path, then even if they engage in sins, God will protect them. But if he's leading people in the wrong path, then every time a citizen sins due to the ignorance, if they're not getting the proper education in the schools, they're not getting the proper laws to direct them and guide them according to God's will, the king has to suffer a share of the karma of all the sins of all the citizens. Very intense. So we should be very, very well learned in this science. Srila Prabhupada is explaining that in this age of Kali, the world at large is very much ignorant of the subtle laws of nature. If you go to the Western world, now there's a little more sensitivity. A clue. No one had a clue that there was anything wrong with slaughtering animals and drinking their blood and eating their flesh. It was just not even an idea that there's some karma or there's some sin. Just so conditioned. We have seen when we were giving these classes in the universities and colleges in America, when we would tell people about the karmic reactions of eating meat, the cruelty, the hard-heartedness of slaughtering innocent animals. Or we'd show them a video or a movie describing, you know, what kind of miserable pain these innocent creatures are undergoing because of their addictions. These students who were 20, 21, 22, 23 years old, even teachers who were 40 and 50 and 60 years old, they were shocked. They went through their whole life and never even thought about this. They just buy it in the restaurant or buy it in the grocery store and eat it. And that's just their culture, that's their tradition, that's just their way of life. You don't think about things that everybody else is doing. You don't think about things that you've been doing ever since you were an embryo in the womb of your mother. When Srila Prabhupada was in Butler, Pennsylvania, he was shocked. Gopal Agarwal, son of a very, very religious man from Mathura, living in Agra, he and his wife were feeding their little tiny infant baby pureed. Pureed means liquefied beef. Instead of drinking the milk from his mother, they're feeding him liquefied beef. That means cow flesh. Prabhupada was amazed. How is this? At such a young age, the child is being just cultured into the consciousness of being totally callous and ignorant of the sins and the suffering that they're participating in. So by the time they're 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, they're just doing it out of habit. You don't think about habits like that. As we said, why think about something you've been doing as long as you've lived and everyone else is doing, and it's just totally acceptable. So when we showed them, this is how the cows and the goats and the chickens are suffering, and these are laws of nature. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. For every action is an equal corresponding reaction. Don't you make a connection? And then they hear quotes from Leonardo da Vinci and from George Bernard Shaw and from Mahatma Gandhi and all these people that they actually think are great, who are saying things like, who was it? Da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci, they're all going to the museums to see his art. Ah, such a great person. But then he tells them, this they never see in the museums. This they only get from devotees or other people who are trying to be merciful to living beings. He said, someday when people become civilized, they will see that eating meat, which involves killing animals, is not different than murdering a man. Haribo. You're wondering why there's wars always going on in the world?
What do you expect from people whose stomachs are graveyards? That's what a meat eater is. His stomach is a graveyard. Because you're killing innocent children of God, your children will be killed in the battlefields. Now the battlefields are coming right into the cities in the form of terrorism and bombs. We must understand. People are shocked. I was shocked to see how shocked everyone was shocked. They were thinking, really? You mean there's that's what karma means? I just thought karma means that you do something nice and something nice is going to happen. We didn't understand that this is what karma is about. We're going to have to suffer miserably every time we eat. Yes, you don't understand these things. You don't understand how these cows and these other animals are suffering. We never thought that there's any suffering involved. We thought it's just happening naturally. Something like you go to McDonald's and what's between the bread is just something that was picked from a tree. They don't think, they don't evaluate what really happened because they're ignorant. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining herein that there are many subtle laws which are practically unknown to people in general, but the Krishna consciousness movement is very scientifically distributing all this Vedic knowledge for the benefit of the people of the world. Today people are very scientifically minded. They are not inclined to accept something because it says it in the scriptures or because it is the principles of religion. They need to be scientifically proved that actually what is saying makes sense, it's logical, it's reasonable. Srila Prabhupada's wonderful, wonderful philosophy was transforming people who had given up religion as dry dogma, as superstitious traditions. Because Prabhupada was explaining things scientifically, logically, and practically. Therefore, it transformed people's lives. And we see even here in Mumbai, it's become a very westernized city. India, at one time it was famous for the sages and the rishis. Now it's famous for computer technologists. In between it was famous for snake charmers and beggars. When I came to India, everyone was saying, people, when I was on my way, well, you go there, you'll just get diseased and die. They weren't thinking they're sages and rishis and great Brahmins. They were just thinking there's people lying in the street with rats crawling over them and they're dying of diseases and people are playing with snakes. Haribo. Of course, when I came, there were people putting snakes on me, and I did get diseased and almost died, and I became a beggar myself. Because somehow or other, India is famous for those things. But to pierce through that external apparent covering, then you find, what are the sages, what are the rishis, what is the great spiritual culture that is the foundation of this society? It is incredible. But today, people of India are trying to uplift themselves through science and technology, using these Bharat Bhumi brains that are meant to understand the subtle laws of God. They're using it to understand the subtle laws of computers, hard disks and softwares and all of these things. And how expert they are, they're the best in the world. So yes, people are becoming scientifically minded. And as they become scientifically minded, they just put aside all the superstitious family traditions of their so-called religions. They become irrelevant in their lives. But what a culture shock it is when they come in contact with Srila Prabhupada's philosophy. It's presenting what is the soul, what is the body, what is material nature, who is God. The philosophy of Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Veda Vyas, all of these great personalities are coming together. And people are convinced. People want to give their lives for this purpose. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining how, because we have this knowledge, it is our duty to share it with the people in general. Just like Vedic literature has explained how the first duty of a grihastha is to be charitable. If you have, you must share what you have. Otherwise, you're sinful. Just to collect, just to hoard, cannot bring happiness, because it's not in compliance with the laws of nature. God is providing everything for everyone. And those who have are meant to be the caretakers of those who do not have. So therefore, grihastha, duty to be charitable. And the greatest charity, of course, is to uplift people's consciousness by using whatever God has given us. Now, money is a type of wealth. But a greater wealth than money is knowledge. Those who have knowledge are responsible for sharing that knowledge with others. And the more knowledge you have, the more you're responsible to share it. Srila Prabhupada, he had all knowledge. And because he felt such a sense of responsibility on the basis of compassion, he felt obliged to share this knowledge which Krishna has given him with the whole world. That is why he wrote these books. So much sacrifice Srila Prabhupada endured to write these books. So much incredible hardship Prabhupada underwent to build these temples. We have just been hearing for the last several days, during the wonderful 25th anniversary of installation of Radha Das Bihari, senior disciples of Prabhupada, who have come from various parts of the world, came together for this reunion. And they were describing what Srila Prabhupada went through to build that temple, and what all of them went through in assisting him to build that temple. Incredible austerities. And it was all voluntary. No one had to do it. Prabhupada was not under any social pressure to do it. He was under intense social pressure not to do it. The people around him, his own disciples, everyone was saying, Prabhupada, not here. It's too much trouble, too much fighting, too much disease, too much misery. Let's just go somewhere else and do it.
But Prabhupada understood this is the best place. The best place for what? To disseminate transcendental knowledge. He didn't work so hard and fight so boldly simply because he wanted to build a beautiful building. There are so many beautiful buildings in India. Prabhupada's temples are educational institutions. He would stay up all night long, practically every night, translating and writing his purports to his books. How hard he worked to do that. And then how he traveled all over the world, inspiring his devotees to distribute these books. Because he had knowledge. Out of his love, out of his compassion, he understood it was his responsibility to share this knowledge scientifically, practically, for the benefit of the whole world. Hundreds and millions of books were going out. And Sachinandan Maharaj, one of the biggest, most glorious of all book distributors in history. Someday he can tell you stories. He would be in mountains of snow all over his body, just going on outside for 12, 14 hours a day with freezing winds and ice all over. And he'd just be going to person in person trying to convince them to take a book. And maybe one out of 20 will accept. And the rest will either ignore you or say some cruel words toward you. Or they might even physically harm you. You may even get put in prison. You were put in prison also? Every book distributor practically was put in prison from time to time. It was just part of the seva. Sometimes you're beaten, sometimes you're spit on, sometimes you're blasphemed, sometimes you're put in prison. That's just part of the life of a book distributor in the Western world. But they were happy to do it because they understood Prabhupada was taking on hundreds and thousands of times more difficulty to give us these books. So this is a small thing. We should be blissful to accept some sufferings on behalf of Guru Maharaj's mission to give scientific knowledge for the benefit of the world. So why Prabhupada wanted these temples? It's like you have books and you also have colleges where you practically understand how to apply the knowledge of your books. That's what the temples are for. Places where people can congregate to actually hear from learned professors of this knowledge. People who have been trained to understand both academically as well as practically. What is the content of these books and how to make it a part of your life? That's what these temples are for. So that people see the scientific basis of Krishna conscious knowledge, how it is practical, how it is real, how it is being lived by people even today. Oh, how much austerity Prabhupada and his devotees went through to build that temple. Why? So that devotees could be living by the highest standards of spiritual perfections in their life and teach it to others by their lifestyle and by their words. Then the temple is really glorifying Radha Ras Bihari, Radha Gopinath. Radha Gopinath, people come to the temple. But how many guests know anything about what Radha Gopinath is? People will come on Janmashtami. Tens and thousands of people are coming. It's very nice. They get some benefit.
but probably 80 to 90% of the people that come, they see the deities and they think that some are just thinking he's an idol. And I'm coming because my grandmother wants me to come with her. So I'll just to make her happy, I'll look at the idol and then go. Other people are thinking that, yes, so nice. This is Krishna. He's one of the 33 million gods, devatas. Today's Janmashtami, so we'll see Krishna. But on Durga Puja, we'll see God and Durga. And in Ganesh Puja, we'll see God and Ganesh. And in Shivaratri, we'll see God and Shiva. And every other day, I'll see God in my bank account. God is everywhere. God is everything. So anywhere you look, there is God. So we'll see Krishna, and that we'll understand he's also God. God is everywhere. God is everything. So many temples, so many gods, and here's one. So yes, yes, Krishna, you're also God, so you're all right. So many people are saying, yes. And other people are coming and thinking, Krishna. He's that playful God who has temporarily manifested from his supreme existence as the impersonal Brahman. Yes? So people are coming, but how many people understand how to actually take darshan? Who is the deity? Tens and thousands of people may be coming. They don't know what Krishna is. They don't know what the soul is. They don't know what bhakti is. Did Prabhupada sacrifice so much of his life just to give that facility to people? That millions of people will just come and give a little donation in the box and say, and think, oh yes, yes, oh, impersonal, all-pervading me! This deity is actually me! By my lila, when I want to play the flute, I become like this. But somehow or other, I'm temporarily covered. But I'm going to do my meditation, and you'll see that Krishna, someday, I will manifest this form. Is that why Prabhupada built these temples? Not at all. Prabhupada writes, right in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the reason that he opened these temples is to give people the opportunity to associate with devotees. Unless people associate with devotees in such a way that the devotees educate them. Devotees influence their hearts by the culture that they have created amongst themselves. Then they'll come to the temple in ignorance and they'll leave the temple in ignorance. So Srila Prabhupada, it was his compassion that he built these temples. And just as the devotees had to work so hard, had to undergo such incredible suffering. Did you hear what those people were saying? There were snakes all around them, cobras all around them, gigantic rats, gigantic cockroaches, mosquitoes. Practically every one of those devotees were getting jaundice, and then malaria, and then typhoid, and then all hepatitis, and all kinds of amoebic dysenteries. Arivo. It was just their life. It was part of their life that they accepted. And poverty. and heat. And they weren't accustomed to this.
They underwent all this because they wanted to assist Srila Prabhupada in building this temple. But factually, the building of the temple is only a very preliminary stage of Prabhupada's mission. Then, what type of austerities, what types of sacrifices are devotees willing to undergo to actually make the temple what it's supposed to be? When we hear from all these devotees what they did to build it, we shouldn't think, well, it's already built, so now what are we going to do? Building the temple is just the beginning. Now, what do you do with the temple? What is the experience people have when they come to the temple? That is dependent on how much we make sacrifices in our own personal lives to create the spiritual world. To give them transcendental knowledge and practical spiritual experiences. Srila Prabhupada, the temples that he already had built, the main function of the GBC was to make sure the spiritual standards and the ethical accountability of each temple was perfect. That was Prabhupada's concern. And the more influential a temple is, the more it's going to have an impact on the society, either positive or negative. So Srila Prabhupada, whatever he did, every single aspect of his society is meant for one purpose: to purify the hearts of the members and to broadcast scientifically the knowledge of Krishna consciousness for the benefit of all people of the world. It is our responsibility. And Prabhupada explained, you make advancement to the extent you accept responsibility. And we should understand this deeply within our hearts, because our spiritual advancement is depending very much on how we understand this ideal. Prabhupada said, you make spiritual advancement to the extent you accept responsibility. Now, there's different types of responsibility. One is we're given a particular service. Pujari, make sure 6 offerings, 6 aartis, on time, every day, with cleanliness. That's a responsibility. You're asked to clean, you're asked to make garlands, you're asked to cook for the deities, bhoga offerings. Responsibility to be there on time, to do it with the proper consciousness, that is your responsibility. You must completely dedicate yourself to that service while you are doing it. But we also have the responsibility of the vows we take in initiation. It's a serious responsibility to chant the holy names attentively every day with our heart and soul. That is our responsibility. We vowed to do that. And we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing Bhagavad Gita. It is our responsibility to read these books. It is our responsibility to understand Krishna conscious philosophy And it is our responsibility, now that we have this knowledge, to share it with others. With our words, with our intelligence, with our actions, with our wealth, with whatever we have. It is our responsibility. We have received, we must now share. So this mission of preaching should be understood in this light. Out of Prabhupada's compassion, we have been given. Now it is our responsibility to be instruments to share that compassion of his with others. It is Krishna's compassion, according to our capacity, whoever we may be. There was talk of little Saraswati, 4-year-old child. She would just run up to people. She even did to me. I was standing there.
Just crossed me down in 1971. I was just standing in a big crowd and she just ran up.
I didn't even see her. She was so small. I just felt someone take my hand and shake it. And I looked down and she was looking up smiling. Little tiny girl. And she said, "Guess what?" And I said, "What?" "Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Then she smiled and laughed and ran away. Very well. So I was very pleased. Because the other devotees were preaching in such ways that it was not so palatable to my conditioned state at the time. But I was very happy with the way she preached to me. And then the next night, I believe it was, Prabhupada brought her up and said, "This little girl, Saraswati, she's such a good preacher. She's a perfect preacher, because that's all she knows, but she tells everyone." So if you have the caliber of a very erudite, scholarly person, and you could go deeply into the philosophy and you could explain it by very, very scientific terms, then broadcast this message according. But if you're just a simple person, and you can just tell people how nice Krishna is, and how happy you are with Krishna, the perfection of our life, whether we're little spiders or whether we're big Hanumans, is to take the responsibility to live for the benefit of others. Because otherwise, even the great scholars and leaders of our society hardly have a clue of what are the subtle laws of nature. What is the purpose of life? So as King Prithu accepted responsibility for his citizens' welfare, every devotee should accept such responsibility on behalf of Guru and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada would often say, if you give Krishna to others by this book distribution, by this college preaching, by having wonderful temples, by creating a culture of devotion, a culture of ethics, morality, based on loving Krishna and serving Krishna, if you do this, Prabhupada said, you will benefit and the whole world will benefit. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. We must end now because they have to decorate the temple for the festival. Hare Krishna.